1690 AM.
For CJLO News, I'm Donald Roberge. L'Union étudiante du Québec, the Quebec Student Union, is denouncing the province's plan to almost double tuition fees at English language universities for out-of-province students. The group of 93,000 members, made up mostly from French language schools, is criticizing the decision by Education Minister Pascal Derry, saying that it was an unacceptable way of doing things and that Derry was looking at distributing the new revenue to francophone universities without a clear plan about how the money will be spent. The union comprises 11 student associations, including l'Université de Montréal and l'École Polytechnique, though Bishop's University, the smallest English language university in Quebec, is also a member. Bishop says that they risk losing 30% of its student body and is risking its future should this decision be put forward. Last week, the Quebec government announced that it would be increasing the fees for out-of-province students from roughly $9,000 a year to $17,000 a year, though current students will be able to complete their studies under their old tuition system. A busy two-block area on St. Catherine Street West is set to be renovated, with construction ending in 2025. The stretch between Peel and Mansfield Streets has already been dug several meters down, and a project that city officials are saying is currently the most complex in the city. Once completed, the section will have new infrastructure, and while sidewalks will remain open, safety personnel will help direct pedestrians safely among the heavy equipment entering and exiting the location. Concordia University now has its own therapy dog in order to help overwhelmed students relieve stress. Newton, a 6-month-old Portuguese water dog originally from Saint-Hyacinthe, will be part of the campus's Safety and Prevention Services Department, though his main focus will be to accept petting and scratching from students. The breed was chosen specifically for its ease around humans, as well as its hypoallergenic coat. Concordia's security team feels Newton will bring a more human face to the department, making them more approachable to students, while helping to reduce the rise of stress and anxiety prevalent at schools since the pandemic. For more, visit CJLO 1690 AM podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
CJLO! That was Mac Miller, Dang, featuring Anderson .Paak. I can't keep on losing you. You know what? It's been a long time that we haven't been on the show, but there's a whole new staff here, and I'm pretty darn darn it, I'm so dang hyped. You're listening to the Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Rusty, as you can tell, but anyway, I'm Gabriel Gindi. Beside me, Jacob Snyder.
How you doing?
Alice Martin. How are you guys?
Oh, excellent, man. Really excited to be here.
Really glad to be here as well.
Yeah, so we have a lot to talk about. I did play this song for a reason. I told you, Alice, beforehand, I wanted to know, maybe, did you have any inkling as to why I played it?
I think you may be referencing to the Canadians having a very underwhelming loss yesterday night.
Not only that, though, but one of their standout centers.
Yes, Kirby Doc.
Yeah, who's unfortunately going to miss the whole season with an ACL and MCL tear. And this isn't the first time Kirby Doc's been injured. He was injured last year as well. I believe around the 22nd game of the season he was injured. Before that, broke his wrist with Chicago while he was playing with Team Canada, actually. So he's been out pretty much for the past 3 years. So it's going to be interesting to see who they can replace at that center position. Who do you think they're going to take up?
Listen, I mean, from yesterday's game, I really didn't see any one particularly standing out, but I feel like they could still manage to do without. But who would you maybe feel could take on that position? It's still early in the season.
It's pretty tough. It's going to be probably someone from Laval for sure. I'm probably thinking maybe you can give like a young buck a try, like a Joshua Roy, for example, from Laval. That's possible, but it's still be to be determined, I guess, right? So you actually went to the game yesterday.
Yeah, I was. I was gonna say lucky, but I was lucky enough to be there. But it was still it was a tough game. Although and the crowd did. Show their deception at a lot of times, but it was a tough game to watch because the Canadians didn't seem like they could. I mean, they could stay on their skates, to be honest, and or keep their sticks in their hands. Like, it seemed as though they were very disorganized, and as we chatted before, like they lacked structure and they didn't look like they were tied together.
So one takeaway I had from that game was, of course, you mentioned structure, right? Mm-hmm. And it looks like when it comes down to like the breakout zone entry, it just seemed very disheveled, very discombobulated, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. What did you take away from that?
That they had a lot of trouble not only getting into the offensive of the offensive end of the Wild, but like even when they were there, they couldn't like create the opportunities. They were like, They've been dominated that whole game by the Wild. They didn't have any opportunity, much opportunities, and in those opportunities couldn't capitalize or rarely did.
Mm-hmm. And that lack of structure kind of like trickles down into like the special teams things, right? You know, you have mm-hmm. the power play, I believe. They had two shorthanded goals scored on them, right? Within the same exactly. possession. Penalty kill was also very abysmal. Like, we kind of see like the Habs from like a yearly basis kind of like do well on a 5-on-5, but then when it comes down to special teams, they just mm-hmm. look, again, I'm going to mention this word, disheveled. So like, what do you think can be done, like in terms of like, let's say Alex Burrows and his special teams, like maneuverability there, how do you think they can like manage to actually be effective on that end?
Great question. I think it will come down to just solidifying themselves throughout the season and having just like key players stand out and having a little more leadership on the ice. There didn't seem like there was anyone that could take on
that leading role.
Yeah, that leading role.
Kind of like Suzuki, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't complete passes a lot of the times, and there wasn't any connection. So I believe that will all just come down to wishing. It's just we're just putting this on the start of the season, and hoping that communication and connection builds when it comes to. Not being in a 5-on-5, and mm-hmm. so that's what I believe may be at stakes here. But you know, they will have to just complete those passes and move on.
Mm-hmm. I was with a few of my friends yesterday, and we were talking about how we've been Habs fans since we were in Pampers, right? Like mm-hmm. It was pretty much, it's customary when you live in Montreal, you kind of become like a fan of like the hometown team, right? And we were talking about it, and the only 80-point player the Habs ever had was Kovalev for like 1 year. Mm-hmm. We never had a 40-goal scorer. We never had really any big player who can take it to that next level. Now we're kind of seeing a bit of energy from Caulfield, but when it comes down to Suzuki, we always, like, for the past 3 years, I'm like, okay, maybe Suzuki will take this one up, like, within the next year. And then the next year comes by, and he's kind of like the similar 60 points a season type of player. Yesterday, he was invisible.
Exactly.
He was mm-hmm. not there at all. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think can get his fire going?
What can get his fire going?
Yeah, like what can boost him up? Like you see Caulfield at least makes plays like on that second goal there when they scored at the end. Mm-hmm. Caulfield kept the puck in. Tried to make a little dipsy doodle, pass it over to, I think it was, I'm blanking. Anywho, but yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
But is that more about the other team, though? You talked to you guys before, and you both kind of talked about how Minnesota was a pretty good team. Does this have more to do with Minnesota than it does the Canadians?
Minnesota's good defensively, but the thing about Minnesota is that they've kind of been middle of the pack for at least over a decade now. And in the playoffs, they kind of like always like kind of like poop the bed in a way, right? Mm-hmm. But it just goes to show that like they're kind of, especially with this dominating win yesterday, they're always on the come up, while Montreal, you know, unfortunately is in a rebuild now, but it's growing pains, right? So hopefully whatever Suzuki can, I don't know, eat some hot sauce before a game, get the fire going, you know, something like that, because right now it's a bit off. But at least the game, despite it being, you know, kind of sour, it did end on a good note.
It ended on a good note. Montreal fans were very happy to see fellow Quebecer Marc-André Fleury in the net for the Wild. He delivered this amazing performance to our dismay, but still, it was very fun to see. A vintage performance as well, going back to the roots, and some stuff we saw from some earlier years. It was fun to see Marc-André Fleury in the net. It was probably his last start of the, his last start in his career in Montreal. But that was very meaningful to Canadiens fan who delivered a standing ovation to Fleury at the end of the game when he was given the first star. So that was great to see. Fleury got his name chanted a lot during the game. Some taunts, but a lot of very positive stuff coming from there. So, you know what? Overall, that was somewhat of a silver lining in this defeat.
What made me reminisce about Fleury's performance yesterday was that little two-pad stack
exactly.
with the glove. How did the ambience feel like?
So I feel the audience didn't know what to say, like, oh gosh, that was a good save, and that showed in their awes, but also like, hey, respect, that was cool to see. And some people out there were obviously very proud to be there, so yeah, the audience sad to see that stop, but still, it's so impressive always to see Marc-André Fleury in the net.
I know we're jumping back and forth, but like, if you're Marty St. Louis, what's the conversation that goes in the locker room after that? Like, what is it? Like especially, like, I know, Jacob, you're less into hockey, but like, any coach in general, when the team has a crappy performance like that, like, how do you assemble up the troops and like try and get it going for the next game?
I was going to say, based on what you guys have said, this is a rebuilding team, right? You have to keep it positive. If you start out on a negative note, the players will quickly lose confidence, especially if they're young.
No, for sure. Was there anything else you wanted to mention about the game? Maybe what about the future? Like,
I was going
to
say, what about the fans? Do people travel? Like, is it Minnesota fans coming to Montreal, or is it just Quebecers?
I was surprised to see quite a few Minnesota Wild fans in the stands, which I guess kind of makes sense at some extent.
It's a great city, yeah.
But it's not that far. It's not Vegas, so but still, so quite a few Minnesota Wild fans in my section. But that was funny to see lots of chirps going on in the crowd. But I was definitely surprised. I guess the other thing I would mention is that the game grew very tense very quickly. So yeah, there was some issues with like some refs maybe not calling some penalties, but like Michael Pezzetta threw down the gloves.
Oh, Pezzetta's face in the penalty box. What was that? He looked like he just smelled smelling salts. Like he looked pumped up.
No, I was kidding with my friend who I went to the game with. We were like, well, they probably should have some therapists in the box in there.
For
to be
sure.
Like, do you want to talk about those big feelings you have? No, but all jokes aside, though, you could see that from the first to the third period. I mean, and you could see that just from Doc's. I mean, the injury he got, that was at the very last seconds during the one of a million brawls that happened during the game. Like, so it's like, I was quite
surprised.
Doc
did play a bit yesterday.
Yeah, he did. He was. Yeah. Not. I wouldn't say any majority, but like,
the injury happened against Chicago in the home opener, and then.
It
kind of like got reaggravated yesterday.
That's yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, you know what? I think we'll take a little break, and we'll be back after these messages.
Yeah, you know I like this shit.
Auto beat. Best in electronic music.
Let me know when.
Let me know when you push that record button, baby.
Thursday nights, 7 to 9 on CJLO, 1690 AM.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Now you know you're the baddest motherfucker.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics. Sharing your passions since 2012.
And we're back. You listen to the starting rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Gabriel Gindi. Alongside me, Jacob Snyder and Alice Martin. Mm-hmm. So we did talk hockey. We talk Habs losing pretty much regular. It's customary at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. You gotta get used to those defeats as a Habs fan. It's part of the fun.
Part of the fun, especially paying those high beer prices. But anyway, now we're gonna switch over to the NFL and the Cincinnati Bengals played against the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. Joe Burrow looked great in the first half, kind of slipped in the second half due to that leg injury. I want to ask you, Jacob, like, what will happen if, let's say, like, this leg injury worsens? Like, what's going to go down?
The team will definitely falter. I mean, you saw it first and second half. When Burrow started the game, he was nearly perfect. And then in the second half, the team couldn't even move the ball. It's not just that they weren't scoring. They were going three and out. And although that Seahawks defense is respectable, they're not the Legion of Boom from back in the day. If Burrow goes down, that team's in a lot of trouble. They're already at 500, and that is not a weak division by any means. Pittsburgh's a contender, and Baltimore's certainly up there as well. And Cleveland, if they can ever get that quarterback situation figured out, I don't think I ever need to see PJ Walker throw another ball. Although Watson, I mean, what are you going to say about him? They could be in some trouble. Burrow's got to get healthy and fast.
So even despite them having Chase as a wide receiver, you know, pieces on the defensive side, there's no shot unless Joe Burrow's 100% healthy.
Well, no, you saw it early in the year. They couldn't even get the ball to Chase. Remember those comments after the game? Chase having to talk about, I'm all is open.
Yeah.
Throw in another word there.
Is that the 7-Eleven meme?
Right. That's where 7-Eleven started. I'm all is open. Give me the ball. When a QB, when you have a lower leg injury, you cannot drive the ball. And then it turns into a dink and dunk offense, which a lot of defenses can stop. It's where the Bengals, what make them great is they can push the ball down the field with those elite receivers. But part of pushing the ball down the field is Burrow throwing it there, right? If he can't get it there, that takes away the most successful component of their offense. Mixon's not been good in a little while. Trust me, I know, I have him in fantasy.
How's that going in the fantasy?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's going good.
I went from not playing since 2009 to being in four leagues, so I'm a busy guy. Wow.
Big jump.
It's been busy, but first place in three leagues, not to brag.
So I'm not the biggest NFL, you know, savant, right? I don't really know what's going. I have a semblance of what's going down, but I'm not, like, let's say, as invested as I would be, like, in hockey or in basketball, right? But on Sunday, I was with a diehard Bengals family watching the game.
Oh.
And it's when I say it's a Bengals household, they were friends, family, wearing all the Bengals merch, the shirts, the jerseys, the Joe Burrow hats, you know, all to the nine yards. They're going ham. And it seemed like every time there was like a little small play that wasn't going in their favor, or like let's say when Joe Burrow would throw something like a pretty weak pass, they kind of like lose a bit of hope. But like, should they be feeling that? Like, really, is that like the concern right now, or should they kind of hold that like hope and maybe be like, this is normal. They're gonna get past this. And
listen, hindsight is always 20/20. But think about their start. They lose both of the first two games. Why didn't they just sit him out? You lost those games, and of course, you go into every game thinking you're going to win. But the smart thing would have been to just sit him out and let that calf get back to 100%. You see it on the sideline. He's got that special wrap on it that does heat and massage, supposedly. He's at risk every time he takes the field. Now, it's not even a hit. It's a bad step, and the season's done. The AFC is just too competitive. You got the Dolphins. You have the Chiefs, both just tearing apart the league.
Both 5-1 too, right?
Yes, both are 5-1 teams, along with my favorite team, the Detroit Lions. You cannot have a quarterback who is dealing with an injury of that sort. Now, hey, better than an arm injury, of course, but it should be a great concern, especially given that offensive line. One of their main linemen went down as well. I think that was, I can't remember his name, but I think one of the tackles. They have enough trouble protecting when all their linemen are playing. Mm-hmm. I think that's a massive risk, and I think it's a reason they're going to miss the playoffs, to be frank.
So you think it's actually there's a chance they miss the playoffs fully?
I think it's likely at this point.
Really? And is that just solely based off of Joe Burrow's injury?
Yeah, I think he's an injury risk, and the rest of the team, I've been impressed by the defense, but the rest of the offense, Higgins and Tyler Boyd, both dropping a ton of passes. Those were supposed to be legitimate number two and number three receivers. I mean, for Boyd, every year it seems like every offseason the Bengals are turning down number one picks for him, but he's really not producing. So what happens when a team takes away Chase? Burrow has to hold the ball a bit longer, waiting for these other receivers to get open and takes the big hit.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a few teams that are 5-1, right? You have the Dolphins. You have your Detroit Lions. And I want to get into a bit of your backstory, both of you, because you guys are new to the show. Again, thank you for coming. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, love being here.
So you know what? Maybe after I ask you this question, we can get into a bit more of the personal side. But like you mentioned a few of these 5-1 teams. Who do you think is going to come out on top? And don't be biased here, because I know you're a Detroit Lions fan.
So obviously, I'm going to say Lions. I do truly believe, though, the Lions are the best team in the NFC. But as for the AFC, you can't go past the Miami Dolphins. That offense is truly electric. Yeah. Now, their defense, one of the worst in the league, if you've taken time to watch them. Their cornerback room is the worst in the league. But they have enough of a pass rush where I feel like they could overcome that. And with how many points they score, I think they're well on their way to maybe making a deep run. And as for the Chiefs, I was actually in Arrowhead watching my Lions win that one to open the NFL season. They have some serious issues. It's masked by Mahomes' play a lot of the time, but their receiving core, my goodness. When Kelsey's out, and you know we've seen now, especially when he went down in the one game, he completely missed the opener. Mahomes' receivers have trouble catching the ball.
Mm. And even with, like, let's say, Andy Reid coaching, you need those pieces, right?
But that's the thing. Andy Reid was able to scheme these guys open, and they're still not getting catches.
So between Mike McDaniels and Andy Reid, let's say if there's like a playoff bout, who do you think is going to go on top?
I think McDaniel.
Yeah?
If you look back at Reid, I know the Chiefs have had so many deep runs, but Reid's had a lot of trouble in the playoffs in his career, believe it or not. It's why he got fired from Philly in the first place. I think this Chiefs team might be running out of a bit of steam. Despite, I know, the 5-1 record, everyone sees that, Mahomes' excellent play, but you can only go so far. We saw it the year they lost to the Bengals, and it was Bengals-Rams in the Super Bowl. The Chiefs weren't really able to score against that Bengals defense. I think they'll face similar problems. They'll obviously make the playoffs. They'll have a very good seed. But I think once you get into the playoffs, the game slows down a bit. That team will really struggle.
And like we talk about these legendary coaches, McDaniel's lesser, but like Andy Reid, for example, he's won a few championships with Kansas City, did fairly well-ish kind of in Philly.
In Philly, but always came up short at the end.
Yeah. So when we, like, let's say transition over to like a Bill Belichick, who's right now having probably one of the worst starts to a season, I think, in the past 15, 20 years, right? How do you come about that? Is it time for Belichick to like depart? Do you move Mac Jones? Like what's the game plan?
Well, you move Mac Jones, maybe to a lower division of football. The issue with Belichick is Belichick the GM doomed Belichick the head coach. Now I know this past draft, Christian Gonzalez, before he got hurt, was an excellent player. But if you look back, I don't think anyone could name me the last good skill position player Bill Belichick has drafted. Last year, taking Cole Strange very high as a guard, he's average at best. Their receiving core, my goodness, you have an injured Juju Smith-Schuster. You have Devontae Parker, who struggled to catch critical deep ball drop. The running back situation, I don't know what happened with Ramondre Stevenson. He looked like an all-star last year, and this year struggling to get more than 4 yards a carry. If Bill was able to step back away from that GM role and just coach, I think this team would look a lot better than it does, but he doesn't seem to want to do that.
I got to ask you like an actual, like not serious question, but considering the Patriots, is there nepotism going down?
You worry about that. Having two of your kids on the staff.
That's what I'm saying.
That's now, not to bring up basketball. Are they
like qualified though?
That's the thing. You'd never know that. He could have them insulated, other coaches picking up slack, and obviously none of that, nothing ever gets out of New England. I'll still give them credit, except for that one book. I think it was Seth Wickersham. After the Brady and Belichick run, he kind of gave you a little bit of a peek behind the scenes, but nothing gets out of New England. You don't hear a lot, even when the team's doing badly. You don't hear players ripping the coach. Now, that said, after the game, I think one of the Las Vegas players had been on New England the prior year, talking about how Bill didn't come say hi. So there seems, something seems to be brewing there. Now, can you, like you said, can you fire a coach like that?
I don't, like, especially if you have two of your children within the organization, it doesn't have to be revolved around football, right? Like, you can have, like, if you have any family member within a certain team, it could possibly mess up a dynamic if, let's say, the father gets, like, sent packing. Right.
No, and hinder growth, period. Like if, yeah. If you kind of stay static, you're missing out on some potentially opportunities outside that box, I believe. Yeah.
Is there like that anything? Is there like anything like that in like baseball?
In recent
baseball, no. But what I was gonna say, Los Angeles Clippers, it tore them apart. Doc Rivers brought in his son,
oh,
Austin,
yeah, Austin
to play point guard.
Yeah, that's
it
classic.
Destroyed that team.
Yeah,
and.
Yeah.
That's a great point by you. That the same thing could very well be happening, but in my opinion, it's more to do with Belichick, the GM, than the coach. You can only coach average players so far, and that team, especially on offense, yikes.
But what's their record there?
1-5.
Yeah, 1-5. So they're ultimately done for the season.
Yeah,
they're finished.
Their season's done. Again, the only saving grace could be the draft. You have two excellent quarterbacks coming out, Caleb Williams, who... before the tough one last week looked amazing, and my personal favorite, Drake May, one of the best throwers I've seen in a few years.
But to be frank, New England had their time in the sun.
No, listen,
they were good.
Listen,
let another team come in, have their legacy or like their little championship run for X amount of years. New England, you can like go to bed now. It's okay. You know, it's fine.
You know, I say that. never root for the Patriots. Rooted against them most times.
Yeah.
But I was a big Brady fan when he moved to Tampa for about a year. Lions were always the team, but
okay, and I said this on the show multiple times with Liam. I was like, you've already done everything possible at your position. You've won X amount. What, like seven rings? Six rings?
Six rings.
No, right? Seven.
Seven rings, right?
Seven, yeah. Was with Tampa Bay.
He
six
won
with New England.
Seven rings.
No,
go tuck your kids in at night.
Oh,
go see your wife, you know?
Oh, which one? No.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which,
exactly.
Hey, lucky
no, but
guy.
That's the thing now. No. I don't know why. He just, I don't know. Sometimes, I guess, when you're in the limelight for so long, you know, especially when you're an athlete at his caliber, you don't know anything else, right? So like, it's always a routine. So at one point, I'm like, bro, just leave, man.
Oh,
like, you've done everything.
Listen, I've spent a lot of time at Lions games, and I've been lucky enough to meet a lot of the current and former players. It's very tough to give up. It's tougher than is giving up your
for sure
favorite thing and stepping out of that limelight. And we may all see it like, yes, you've accomplished all this, but they talk about how they can never replicate the feeling they get within the locker room anywhere else in any other aspect of life. So they're just holding on to that. Even when they're past, we all saw the last Brady Bucks here. That was terrible.
Yeah.
He didn't want to take a hit. He was throwing the ball way too early, and that team was under 500.
The only player I think who's loving retirement is Chad Ochocinco, but that's it.
Oh! I got to counter that. What about Gronk?
Oh, Gronk too.
Gronk is living his best
Ochocinco,
life.
You know, he's like a house husband now. He's chilling. You know, he's just working around the house.
Whoever
stuff like that.
Whoever his agent is deserves a raise because he got rid in Madden Adjuster.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what a sweet gig! I get to pay you to watch football and then contribute to the Madden ratings. I think that might be my dream job.
Wouldn't it be? Wouldn't it be for all of us? So. We're going to switch over to the MLB now. And this is, if you think I don't know anything in football, baseball.
We got you covered.
Yeah, we got you there.
I need to know what's going down here. So, hold on. Right now it's the postseason, right? Like, what is going down? Well, just let me know.
So, currently, we have the Phillies against the D-backs for the NL. And then the Rangers against the Houston Astros for the AL. A little blanking there. Both the Rangers and the Phillies are 2-0 in their series, so it's a best out of seven, so they still need two more. But, some big players were taken out very early.
all the best teams with over 100 wins losing early. As we were talking about before the show, I can't tell if that's a good or a bad thing. Does that hurt the interest? Like Arizona being in this deep in the playoffs, do people care?
No, exactly. I think the Phillies might be taking them up, and it might be just the Phillies fan base carrying it.
Oh my goodness, the wave of Philly love. I cannot exactly. believe it. I remember before the playoffs started, my friend from Philadelphia loosely follows all the Philadelphia teams. He asked me, do they have a chance? And I said, they looked okay. The second that postseason started, all these guys do now is hit home runs.
Exactly, and we saw that in game two. Okay, first of all, wasn't it Castellanos who also had a good game that day?
Oh, you're hitting a sore spot. Former Detroit Tiger, Castellanos. We should have never let him go. Amazing game. In front of his kid, too. I don't know if you ever saw that.
That's what I was about to say. Okay, we were talking about like family dynasties in the NFL. Castellanos, isn't his kid being drafted by the Phillies, too?
No, his kid's very young. He's a kid in the stands.
Oh wait, okay. I might have messed up some play, but regardless, that kid in the stand was so psyched to see his father.
Oh, it was such a cute reaction. Can I ask about your team?
Oh God, are you doing that to me really right now?
I am. Okay, I am because I want to hear about them. I don't follow them super. I'm a big Detroit fan all around.
If my dismay didn't give it away, I'm a Jays fan. And so they got taken out in the wild card against. Has my memory already taken that out of trauma? But they got taken out by the... hold on. What? Why am I... No, seriously, it's PTSD. I totally forgot.
Here, I'll just pull that off. But yeah, tell me your thoughts on the series.
No, wait. Hold up. The Jays got taken out by
Minnesota Twins.
By the Minnesota Twins. And honestly, you know what that shows? Because I didn't have a lot of Twins knowledge before they were in the wild card against the Jays. But for what the Jays had in their roster, this was a very incredibly early like leave. And honestly, I mean, the thing is like, and I think that's every single fan of the Jays can agree with me, is that... we're just used to this disappointment. It's like being a Canadiens fan. The Jays, they'll have everything. They'll have everything in their favor. But God, they aren't clutch. They cannot pull through. It was so disappointing. They were swept.
Having followed that Twins team, they play against the Tigers about 8 to 10 times a year. Mm-hmm. I was shocked you guys lost that one. You have such good young talent, mm-hmm. like Guerrero is incredible. One of the best hitters I think I've ever seen play. And the Twins, injury riddled, barely won a very, very poor division. How come the manager is back, though, for the Blue Jays?
Oh, God. I mean, that's a great question, considering him pulling out pitcher Jose Berrios in Game 2. That was an incredibly controversial decision. So, honestly... You know what? I think the only reason he stays there is that in the regular season, the Jays still fared pretty well, especially like at the start. They were over 500 during the regular season. And you know what? Some players may just be used to Schneider. Seriously, I'll never understand why he's staying. But I just believe it might be to keep, cuz the thing we got to like take into account is that some of the core players, some of the players that fan grew really accustomed to, I'm talking about Whit Merrifield, Kevin Kiermaier, who like cemented himself in the hearts of Jays fans all over Canada. And I'm blanking there. Ryu, that pitcher.
Oh, yes.
So those players are becoming free agents at the end of the season. We're losing such a huge chunk of the team. So, I believe we just may need that pillar of, not a pillar because obviously he's very brittle, but we need that Schneider as sort of staying to keep that.
To keep kind of the momentum from the past season. But
mm-hmm, exactly.
But okay, they had the early exit. Are you looking at other big name free agents? I don't have the list in front of me right now, but these players that lost you that game, do you really want them all back? Or would you like to go shopping?
Honestly, Kevin Kiermaier and Whit Merrifield would would have been really fun to have for another season. And the thing is, like, the AAA, the Bisons, like, the farming system for the Jays isn't doing well either. They're the free agents that they were looking at that are coming up, they aren't going to be available. Shohei Ohtani is never going to go to the Jays. I'm so sorry.
I was going
to
mention that. Yeah, I want to interject. Yeah, because I was like, I heard through the electronic grapevine, the interwebs, that Shohei Ohtani was showing interest in maybe potentially joining the Jays.
You know what?
It's not going to happen, right? It's too hefty of a contract. They don't have the cap for it, right? It wouldn't work.
And he's not a pitcher this coming year. You got to keep that in mind. He's just a hitter. He's got anymore. the torn ligament. I think he's having Tommy John.
Yes, I think. And he's only going to be pitching against for the 2025 season. So Shohei Ohtani isn't going to be that dual powerhouse that we've seen in the first half of the Angels season. Gosh, I was so disappointed when he got injured. He was such a good run.
He was so... Not even being a huge baseball fan, I found myself tuning into his games. What he was doing is incredible. Like, I've never seen that in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. I've heard older people compare Babe Ruth to him.
They didn't even see Babe Ruth play, those older people.
No, I know.
I mean, Babe Ruth, fine, but he was never that insane. Like, Babe Ruth was never... an exceptional hitter and an exceptional hitter at the same time in the same season.
Okay.
And also, I quite enjoy that nuance of Babe Ruth never faced a Dominican hitter.
No, you're right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the talent in the game, obviously, it's just growing higher and higher.
So yeah, I think Shohei Ohtani is really in a section of his own. He stands out. He's above the rest. And some people were even comparing him to Aaron Judge at the start of the season. What was that? No, that doesn't compare.
But okay, your dream wish list. Are we talking hitting or are we talking pitching? Are we talking both?
That's such a great question, because I feel like the pitching lineup was such a great lineup. You know, we had like a 3-point-something ERA, like all these pitchers are going to be coming back, so we're still going to have Gausman, we're going to have Berrios. I'm not going to talk about Alek Manoah, but we had some good pitching. The thing is, the bats are cold. The bats are really, really cold. Bo Bichette, Guerrero, Belt. You know, this is what kind of the team relied on. But I mean, in the postseason, what they've had one run, one hit. I believe, maybe potentially.
Yeah, anyway. You need clutch hitting in the postseason. No, that's
seriously, and they just that was a theme. We've got some great starts, great hopes, amazing, but everyone forgets to knock on wood, and they drop everything at the end. So, I think honestly, I would like to revamped hitting, which I know is possible. Vladdy won the home run like a derby. He knows
can't
how to
do
hit,
can't do it with one guy. One guy can't do it.
You can't do it with one guy, and especially when that one guy like doesn't show up to the plate when you need him. So you know what? A strong hitting lineup that knows how that knows to hit when it's crucial, and that isn't scared, that doesn't shy away, that's aggressive at the plate. Good base running, I think, is going to be really important because the pitching staff is good. We there is a good pitching staff. It's doing its thing. So hitting, really.
Fair enough. Now, as for the teams left, is anyone going to beat the Phillies? I think they have to be the odds-on favorite at this point. I mean, I understand the Astros should have their say in there too, but the way the Phillies' bats have looked.
Honestly, I was surprised to see the Astros fall to the Rangers. But not fall. We're not saying that yet.
Lose the first two. Wow, I already count them out. My goodness.
It's still, I mean, it's 2-0 for the Rangers. So, but the Astros were favored early in like August, September baseball to like really go a long way. But you know what? If the Phillies go all the way, that would be nice. That would be sweet. I wouldn't dislike that.
Phillies Rangers though, is that the World Series you'd want? Like for me, I'd love to tune into Phillies Astros.
Phillies Astros. Tell me why.
Obviously Justin Verlander, long time Tiger great, and the Astros, they just combine. And of course, they're down 2-0, right? I'm gushing about the team losing, but the best all around team I've seen in terms of hitting and pitching. Seeing Altuve, and Verlander go at it against a Phillies team with just exceptional hitting up and down the order. Now, for the Phillies, is Harper going to be able to continue to go, re-aggravating that shoulder injury during base running?
That's a fair point. You know what? It's kind of refreshing to see someone talking positively about the Astros for once.
Now, again, that's part of the thing is the Tigers have been so bad, right? We weren't in the playoff chase.
Oh, really?
So when the Astros were banging on trash cans to give away the pitches, the Tigers weren't even involved. So my level of care about that, not very high. Now, you on the other... Did it bother you? Like, will you never root for the Astros again because of that?
Okay. The thing is, I think every sport has like kind of these teams where you love to hate them. And they're like public enemy number one. So it's, I feel my hatred for the, I wouldn't even say hatred, but like my dislike for the Astros is never going to be the one I have for the Rangers.
Like, actually, as someone who doesn't watch baseball, and that being the only storyline I heard in that year there when that happened, it made me have a bad taste of the Astros up until then.
Mm-hmm. It just
I still feel like when I relate to the Astros, I'm like, okay, yeah, they're the cheaters.
Wow.
Exactly, because it wasn't done it wasn't sportsmanship. It was dirty.
It was deceptive. Conniving. It was foxy.
It wasn't like what's the team that stole signals, but like did it. Well, against the Jays, actually.
Oh, against the Jays?
Wait, no, the Yankees. The Yankees were not stealing signs, but, like, they had picked up on the signs from the Jays were using it against them. But that was on the Jays' fault. Like, did you not see that?
I did not catch that. I must have missed something.
No, the Yanks had just picking up on the Jays signs.
That's a little different, yeah. Like you say, that's the Jays not concealing them well enough.
Yeah, it's on the Jays. The Astros, it was dirty. So, but what I was saying,
I can see in your face, you're totally disagreeing with us.
Let's go, counter. But hold on. Here's why.
Tell me why.
You know what? I was thinking about it, though. You know why? I have their former manager managing my baseball team.
That's why. Okay, so it's biased.
Yep.
Okay,
I think it has to be biased because your reaction.
There you go.
You two both had was the reaction most people have. I understand. I'm on an island with this one. I'm just trying to understand why I'm on this island.
But, like, this is coming from someone, like, who, like, for me, like, I don't watch baseball. Like, I just find it find it boring to watch. I'll
that
be
emphasizes it even more that you don't even watch the sport and have a strong opinion about it.
Yeah, because it was the only thing in my feed for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then it just instills, it's like, okay, yeah, but they continue doing this along the postseason, like different teams.
And the
teams.
Team isn't much different from that one. Was it in 2017 or something?
Something
like that.
Yeah, but like,
so the team isn't much different. So it's like, it's not like it's a brand new team that I can totally absolve of all sins.
If I had a wider range of, like, let's say Astros history, the players, I might be a bit diluted, but the fact is that since it's like Astros, garbage can. Every time I think of the Astros, it's just garbage can. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, they're sly, they're cheating.
Yeah.
Again, I'm coming from like nothing. Like, I don't know what's going down, but I can see. Come on.
I know. I'm just, they're the one baseball team outside the Tigers whenever they're on, I can't not watch. And normally that sort of.
Are they good though? They're good, right? They're a great team.
Up and down. Oh, up and down.
Minus the garbage cans. They're pretty sick.
Right. Hey, you know, they very well could still. And the buzzers. Can't forget the buzzers. Altuve apparently had one under his jersey. That's why he didn't rip it off when they won. When the Patriots did it, when they cheated, I couldn't stand them. And I don't know why this is different for me, but it is. I can't even comprehend the dislike for them continuing. Mm-hmm. And I understand that's a me thing. Like,
we all have our little, like, stops and, right. Like, where we're just bucking on something.
Right, you're just complete, not just to buck either. It's, you know, how you feel.
No, it's fine. I mean, the Astros are... I mean, they're entertaining to watch. So,
On that note, we're going to take a little break. Then when we get back, a little NBA talk to end the show. See you soon.
At Cinema Public, we offer a theatrical program made up of local films and international new releases, classics and little-known nuggets, as well as short films and family screenings. Our tickets are among the cheapest in Montreal, $10 for a regular entry or $8 for students, children, and seniors. We also offer 6-ticket movie cards for even more savings. Come see us at Casa d'Italia, just across from Jean Talon Metro, and visit cinemapublic.ca to discover our programming. Le Cinéma Public for a lively cinema.
Hi, and welcome to the show tonight. Tonight we have
the best new music.
But right now, let's check out the changes in this week's
CJLO
Top 30.
Charts and Crafts, counting down the best new artists played at the station. Every Friday at noon, only on CJLO 6090 AM.
Contact on these screens out high. And a nice driving basket by Zion Williamson. Here's Williamson with another defensive play. Bounces it off to Ingram. Back to Zion with a
He looked like a beast.
So impressive.
Cut from the weak side by
First time, what, I haven't seen him play in over a year?
Oh, it's been a while between injuries and being out of shape. Last year, that was such a strange situation, though, when he didn't come back. The team had medically cleared him.
Yeah, but, you know, with Zion, it's always been a kind of like a weight thing. You know?
Right.
But before that, you're listening to the starting rotation on CJLO 6090 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Borghini, alongside me, Jacob Snyder and Alice Martin. So we were just talking about the return of... does he have a nickname yet? Not even. He hasn't played it long enough to have a nickname.
I was
trying to find one. No, but Zion Williamson looked like a stud coming back with, I think, like something like 16 points, 5 steals. Looked great. But again, one of the deterrences with Zion over so far his career, his short-lived career, is like it's really the weight. I know there's weight clauses stipulated in his contract so he doesn't get re-injured because like he is still one of the higher picks. He was a first-round pick a few years ago, first pick actually. So going into this year, what does it look like for Zion?
If he can stay healthy, that team should be excellent. I've been a huge Brandon Ingram fan for the longest time. He has help. He has a ton of help on that roster. Herb Jones on the wing, Trey Murphy on the wing. You can surround Zion, who's not a very good shooter, but has the elite athleticism and ability to drive with shooter. You can spread the floor and open it up for Zion to drive. That team could make a run.
They could, and they have good depth, right? You know, but looking at more like the accoutrements to a Zion, like a Brandon Ingram, right? Like they have to step up this year to really, because like again, the dynamics have to change because Brandon Ingram was that guy for like the past few years, right? And now with Zion coming back into it, how can they share that role?
That's the only thing you worry about, because sometimes they can't, and it just leads to a messy offense. Guys trying to play hero ball and get there as opposed to actually playing in a system and helping the team win. Hopefully, CJ McCollum, the vet who's just been, he's so revered in the league, can help these guys play together.
Yeah, for sure. So do you think he plays a full season?
No.
No?
I don't. I've never believed in Zion. Now, I'm a big Jaw guy. I always thought they should have taken Jaw.
Really?
I felt
even
like,
despite all...
See,
and then, okay,
now I was
get
getting
into
that.
Get into it.
Yeah, just getting...
Speak King, get into it.
Listen, when the draft first came about, having a dynamic guard like Jaw look coming out of Murray State, and early I just felt I was proven correct on that. But Jaw off the court, obviously there's a lot of issues there. Now, again, I feel like it's opened back up for debate. But, no, if he... He just hasn't shown us he can do it at this level, even at Duke. Think about some of the freak. His shoe blew up, and it caused his knee to be sprained.
He wasn't wearing big baller brand shoes, though. So
oh, my goodness. Lonzo like, Ball.
That's
poor,
one
hey,
thing. Lonzo
rest
Ball,
in peace, Lonzo
one
Ball.
One of my conspiracy theories, if Lonzo, because I remember on a podcast, Lonzo saying he had to change his big baller brand shoes every quarter. If he had not worn those shoes, I don't think he'd have the knee injuries he's having right now.
Oh, and think about how long he'd been wearing them. Yes, that was the first time on the court. You don't think he was hooping in prototypes before that?
Not
who
sure.
What were even worse than the final product?
Exactly. But to go back to the Pelicans, they have great depth. They have Jonas Valanciunas, Larry Nance Jr. They have little sneaky Jose Alvarado hiding in the corner, you know, when they bring the inbound pass, he takes it. But to look at Zion, I kind of have to disagree with you when you're saying that like he didn't really prove himself. Because last year, despite, okay, he didn't play many games, but he still averaged around like 26, you know, 7 rebounds, 4.6 assists.
But I'll push back on that. How good is that if it's only for 30 games? And also, where was he for the play-in? He was cleared. Where was he? Not on the court.
I think they're playing it safe. Because I think they believed that they had the depth necessary to overcome the play-in because you're only playing against what? What were they seeded last year at?
I think they were 10th seed.
Yeah,
I think that was a 9-10 game.
Okay, yeah. So you're,
that
you're
they
playing
lost,
against a,
mind
yeah,
you.
Again, yeah. So if you're playing against... Yeah, but they thought they were going to win, right? Like, every team goes into a play-in thing, they're going to win. And maybe they thought if we get past this play-in, we can activate Zion.
That's a great point, actually.
But, you know, with everything that happened, I guess it didn't happen, you know. But what can you do?
What about you? Wait, what about you? Are you thinking this is the year for Zion?
Well, I think if he looks good right now. I don't know what he's weighing at. Right now, according to ESPN, he's at 284.
Oh, that's I don't know what still a bit much.
Yeah, but I don't know what's stipulated in his contract. I believe it's around hovering maybe two.
I'd heard 260. I don't want to say anything. I'd heard 260.
Yeah, I need to see it on the contract before I spew out like a random number here. But so far, if he's moving it at that speed at 284, and he's a big burly boy.
He is. He's a big guy to start with.
Yeah, he doesn't like gets injured easily, right? So well, minus, you know, the shoes popping and stuff. But,
right. That,
but I, if he plays a full season, I think he might be well over 20-point average. Like, probably around 21, 22.
There's no questioning his ability, but availability is part of it.
Yeah.
And it's going. And we saw with the Pelicans, they weren't nearly as good when he didn't play. It was night and day when he was out there with that deep lineup to where he wasn't. Even though they're deep, the amount of top-end talent, it's Zion and Ingram that are going to have to carry the team.
Yeah.
So he's got to be out there.
For sure. So are they one of your top picks in the West or what?
On paper, yes. I'd say they're going to finish around fourth in the West. The top team in the West, the champs, the Nuggets. It's so hard to go away from them. I was so impressed by Jokic. That playoff run was as special as it gets because Murray wasn't back. Later on, he started playing, you know, better and better. But that wasn't Murray we've seen in the past, where he's just this dynamic guard jumping over people, step back threes. He missed a lot of gimme shots this year to where he's back full strength. You have Aaron Gordon, a lot of young kids, Christian Braun, Porter Jr. finally has a solidified role. We don't need to watch him chucking shots playing hero ball any longer. I think that team's got it.
No, I have to second with you on that. I think Denver still has the one up on multiple teams in the West. Lakers, I don't know, you always kind of have to like throw them in there.
Do we really have to do this every year?
But it's always like such a talking point. I know. It's a broken record at this point, but you have to throw them in. Especially with they had a few pickups this year that were kind of worth it. Not big pickups. Like I think like Kelly Olynyk got picked up as well as I'm thinking off the top here.
You got Torian Prince. You got the point guard from Miami, Gabe Vincent.
Yeah, Gabe Vincent.
Again, all these guys should help but think about it. They're all mid-level guys. Their minimum salary are mid-level guys.
Yeah, but if you consider the team they could have had if they just kept the draft picks, like Ingram.
Oh, my goodness.
Randall, Lonzo, it would have been kind of cool to see them play now. Anyway, but that's not the case because life doesn't happen like that.
No.
But in the East, do we know who we
are? Oh, yes. Yes, we do. Who? The Boston Celtics. With that Celtics? Trade for Drew Holiday, they have the best starting five in the league. Again, they're another team. The question is going to be health. If Kristaps Porzingis goes down, you're going to ask way too much of But he will. That's the thing. But if they're smart about it and they limit his minutes, because in the regular season, Al Horford can hold up for 20 minutes a game. My fear is if Porzingis goes down, you're asking him to play 40-plus minutes, and which is not. Recipe for success. He's just too far past.
I'm gonna differ from your your.
I know where this is going.
What do you think I'm gonna say?
You're gonna say the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh my god, you read my mind. Are you a fortune teller?
I am, because
they have the best like six players, like starting six there, minus like with the one plus there, but like the starting five, I think they are superior to any team in the East.
Listen, that's a popular pick, and a very good pick at that. They're extremely talented, but there are some huge flaws with that roster I don't think people are talking about.
Like what?
Who's going to guard a wing? What, Chris Middleton coming off injury? Dame Lillard can't guard anyone. Giannis guards the bigs.
That's fair.
Starting two guard will be Pat Connaughton. I don't know how good you can feel about that. Brooke Lopez, another year older. Big men do not age well.
Brooke Lopez, though, I think as a six, he can come off the bench and give you something, right? Like,
you're going to start Portis?
I would start Portis. I don't know. Portis kind of like,
listen, I love Bobby P. There's
words I
want to
say that are like more like, you know, but I mess with Portis, you know? Like,
oh, I know. Everyone does. Cool. Like, I love, trust me, yeah. I love Bobby P.
I know what you mean, but over an 82-game season, you know, yeah, I get it. Like, there's going to be inconsistencies for sure, you know, but I don't know. I just find that that 1-2 punch with Damian Lillard, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, it might be nice. And then you have good depth like Pat Connaughton, who's on the wing, Jay Crowder, who can shoot on occasion. You know, Cameron Payne too's there now. So
That's actually a good stealthy pickup.
Yeah, that's a stealthy pickup. You have Cameron Payne, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Giannis, Lillard. Like, they're pretty stacked, to be honest. Like, okay, maybe on the later end of their bench, kind of like randoms there, like Ty Washington Jr.
Oof.
Who's that? I don't know.
He's not 6 feet.
No.
In a very tall league, he's not even 6 feet.
It's ESPN says he's listed here at 6'3".
Okay, in stilts.
Was
maybe.
He wearing stilts? Yes. Yeah, I was like little heel pickups.
I got to ask you, because they were here playing an exhibition. Oh no, they were supposed to be here playing an exhibition, but didn't show. What are we saying about the Toronto Raptors?
Going to be the same year of mediocrity.
God, I think the same thing, and I want them to be better.
I thought, like, when I saw Lillard was leaving, I was like, how great would it be
Toronto
to have Lillard
yes.
in Toronto?
Yes, yes, 1,000 times yes.
And then when I heard at the end when he got dealt to the Bucks, they were second in consideration, I threw my hat up in the air.
I did too, because if I have to read one more article about the Raptors refusing to include Scottie Barnes in trade talks, they treat this guy like he's Kevin Durant.
Well, here's where I can defend the Raptors in that pick. I think that, or in that decision rather, I think that they kind of have like a Kawhi archetype. Kind of like where it's kind of like the same come up where they both got drafted, were not really good shooters, had great athleticism, good hands, you know, very active, but they still were not really refined. They're more robust, right? Like, with Scottie Barnes, if they can really develop them, and Toronto has great development player programs, right? Like, they're really good. It could be possible they can recreate another Kawhi. And I'm not saying he's going to become Kawhi, but, like, maybe some similarities on the offensive end, even on defensive end, too. It's possible.
Okay, but you're talking about developing your future best player in theory, which they very well could. Right now, I 100% agree.
Right now, they have everything but a main guy.
But okay, in the NBA, you need a main guy.
Exactly.
So what direction should they go? Should this do we need to ask if this team should tank?
I don't think they're at a spot. They can't tank. No team really want. No team in any pro sport goes into a season tanking. They just
unless you're the Oklahoma City Thunder for the last 4 years.
Yeah, but they got 37 picks now.
Right, but it works.
So you tank. You get say like first round draft pick, but like, do you want a rookie as like leading this team? Like,
that's the thing. He'd be very young, but it's the easiest access in the NBA to high end talent. Unless you're a city like Miami or LA, you're not getting the first pick of the big free agents.
Toronto's going to become more attractive, I think.
I agree with that point, though.
But. Right now, Masai Ujiri thinks that they have a winning formula. And I can't really see that. Like, Siakam is always a sidekick character. I don't really see him being the main guy. OG's great.
He's not turned down four first-round picks
okay,
great.
But, like I know, yeah, I get that. But he really believes in the team. But, again, they're just missing that one piece. And you could argue that, like, if Kawhi had stayed, who knows, right? But then again, the whole team's changed now, and if they're a younger team, they're more mobile, you know, they have better depth-ish, but again, Malachi Flynn playing at the one,
Losing
Van Vliet's tough. Yeah, but now they have Dennis Schroeder, so...
Played very well for Germany.
Yeah, it's okay, yeah. But again, it's just Dennis Schroeder. That was like their only pickup in the offseason, right? So like, it's kind of like a bit deceiving, disappointing, but hey, on that note, yeah.
Now, not to jump back to the West, but there's another polarizing team. People have either been really high on or really low on, expecting them to take a big jump. The Oklahoma City Thunder, who were actually in Montreal.
What are
your thoughts on those guys?
I like them. They're young, slightly too young, I think. They have great, they're very mobile. They can switch around. They have the Twin Towers and Giddy and Holmgren. They have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But at the same time, they don't have no veteran presence.
That's the thing. That is such a young team, and you're going to be asking a lot of young guys to hit some big shots if they're going to, you know, make it some big games. None of these guys have even seen, well, I mean, if you want to count the bubble, Shai has, but I don't want to get too deep into that. Or the play-in, I guess. But these guys have zero playoff experience, but just such an interesting roster. Even guys like Lu Dort, what a capable NBA wing, elite defender, has started to make shots because, again, you talk about the Raptors with an elite development program. How about the Thunder?
Mm-hmm. They're going to be a fun watch this year. On that note, any final remarks? guys, you guys good?
I
don't know. We'll be here again next week. So I guess on that end, this was CJ Lowe, the starting rotation, you know, on CJ Lowe 6090. I'm Gabriel Guinea, Jacob Snyder, Alice Martin. See y'all next week. Make me open up.